This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 138, What Prevents Pressure Ulcers from Healing? The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there and welcome back. My name is Rob Schenck, and I am your host of this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. In this episode, we are going to be talking about the healing of pressure ulcers, namely, what are some of the main issues that would prevent a pressure ulcer from healing normally or quickly. But we don't do this alone. We have help. And on the episode this week is Martha Kelso. Martha Kelso is a friend of the podcast. This is going to be her third appearance on the show. She appeared on the show way back in May of 2019. We had her talking about prevention of pressure ulcers. Then we had her back not too long ago, episode 135, which was in November of last year, talking about the staging of pressure ulcers and how the current model of staging might not be the best. But she is an expert in pressure ulcers, and we are so happy when she comes on the program to talk about that. But for those that haven't listened to those episodes, please go and do that. But for those that haven't, here's a little bit of info on Martha. Martha Kelso is the founder and chief executive officer of Wound Care Plus. As a visionary and entrepreneur in the field of mobile medicine, she has operated mobile wound care practices nationwide for many years. She enjoys educating on the art and science of wound healing and how practical solutions apply to healthcare professionals today. Kelso enjoys being a positive change in healthcare, impacting clients suffering from wounds and skin issues of all etiologies. Kelso's desire to make healthcare a better place for consumers motivated her desire to form and found Wound Care Plus. In her early career, she was a wound nurse in long-term care, and this past experience has committed Kelso to educate other fellow wound nurses on regulations and national standards of wound healing, thereby empowering the bedside nurse with tools and knowledge. And we are so happy to have her back on the program. Martha, welcome back.
Hey, Rob, good seeing you again. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate you. As I mentioned at the top just then, this will be your third appearance. We're so glad that you keep coming back. But just before I throw you into the conversation, Martha, I just wanted to remind our audience that we're going to be not necessarily doing a deep dive, but we're not going to cover the basics of a pressure ulcer. I highly recommend the listeners out there that don't have an understanding of what a pressure ulcer is or how they developed to go back and listen to Martha's episode 118. We cover the basics of what a pressure ulcer is, how they develop, how they're dangerous, that kind of thing. In this episode, we really want to stick to the intermediate level of talking about how pressure ulcers heal or don't heal. So the first question, mm-hmm. Martha, is going to be basically, what, if any, role does nutrition, what a resident eats, what does that have to do with how and why a pressure ulcer will or will not heal?
Sure. So nutrition is an interesting thing, you know, being part of the human race, and that, gosh, what we put in our mouth can really affect how our body reacts. And there's a medical term out there, we call it homeostasis. Our body likes to maintain homeostasis, which means it's happy, it's well-balanced. But certain things, even like a high-sodium diet, can quickly throw us out of homeostasis, cause swelling, cause a metabolic disorder or disturbance. And so just in the basic terms, just thinking about that, with nutrition and pressure ulcers, sometimes pressure ulcers are caused from poor nutrition, or what we refer to as malnutrition. And there's kind of a misnomer out there that overweight or obese people cannot have malnutrition, when in fact they can. And oftentimes our obese clientele are the ones that are malnourished because we're putting not healthy things into our body, not giving our bodies the nutrients that it needs. But if somebody said to me, hey, Martha, here's five different foods on my mother's plate, and she has a pressure wound, which one is most important for her to eat? I know she's only going to eat 20% of her meal. Which one should I reach for first? My response would be protein. Because the challenge is, and I'm not a registered dietitian, but, you know, nationally we recognize that once somebody develops a wound, they need anywhere from 3 to 5 times the amount of protein that someone without a wound needs to get the wound to heal. And so sometimes it doesn't really matter how we get the protein in them. If it's a supplemental shake or if they're willing to eat the protein that's on their plate, that protein, I would say, is number one. Without that protein, the wound is not going to heal. We can't develop the building blocks that the body needs to start forming granulation tissue, which is the tissue we need to get the wound to fill in.
That's the connected
dots.
That's
kind of a long answer, Rob.
No, that's you hit it right in the last sentence. I was thinking about, okay, I get protein is important, but what does it do? And that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You're right. It creates the granulation. It helps rebuild that tissue. Yep. Okay, so mm-hmm. So protein, important. What else?
Mm-hmm. Same thing with hydration. So if we are dehydrated, we don't have enough hydration in our body, it's really hard for our cells to move around and get to where they need to be to start filling in that wound bed, getting the granulation tissue moving, fibroblasts, keratinocytes, those are all $6 terms, but yet our body needs those growth factors to start filling in. In a dehydrated body, we don't produce enough of those cells, nor is there enough fluid for the cells to move to our wounds to start filling in that tissue. When I was working at the wound center, running hyperbaric oxygen chambers, I remember one of the questions we would always ask was, do you smoke? And they would say, yes. And we would say, well, one cigarette negates the effects of hyperbaric oxygen. And at the time, we're talking 10 years ago, one hyperbaric oxygen treatment could be as much as $1,300. And I would say, you know, that's a really expensive cigarette. But you think about when you smoke, it robs the body of the oxygen molecule we need to form granulation tissue. And so smoking is a really big thing. If you smoke and you want to heal, you got to put down the cigarettes. You got to put down the nicotine.
I think that there's a knowledge deficiency in that area. You would be surprised at how many people that, especially in the state of Georgia, I feel like if you go into South Georgia, everybody's smoking. But just mm-hmm. the knowledge gap in that, like, you know, well, you know, I understand I don't want to get emphysema or lung cancer, but I'm going to take that risk. It's like, no, like, I mean, it's having an effect on your body other than emphysema and lung cancer. Mm-hmm. It's preventing your mm-hmm. your wound from healing. There's a big misconception mm-hmm. about that or lack of mm-hmm. knowledge on it.
Mm-hmm. So smoking is definitely one of those things we can mitigate. Sometimes with wounds, there's things we can't mitigate. We can't eliminate some of the barriers. And so those are things that we can focus on from a medical standpoint, but the barriers that we can eliminate, let's do that. So if you are chair-ridden, you're in a wheelchair all day, or you're in bed all day, and you have the capability of getting up, do it. So the more you get off your bottom, your derriere, the more blood can restore.
Right.
There's other things like
With regard to nutrition, you mentioned protein as being good. You mentioned being hydrated, so making sure that oxygen is getting in there. What about is there anything that's bad in terms of nutrition? Like, for example, I mean, what's your understanding about sugar or blood sugar levels?
Yeah, blood sugar levels, once they get out of control, obviously impair everything from our vision to our kidneys, to the body's ability to absorb. So when people are hyperglycemic, they have too much sugar in their body, it throws our body out of that state of homeostasis or well-being, good balance, and the cells, our body's cells, cannot utilize the nutrients that are there because there's too much sugar and it's preventing the body from doing what it needs to do just to absorb our regular nutrients. And so we talk about managing blood sugars, but even in a wound care world, pre-diabetes still acts like diabetes. It still negatively impairs the microvascular blood flow and still negatively impairs our ability to absorb nutrients. So if you know that you're pre-diabetic and you can do things now to turn that around, whether that's diet, exercise, you know, everything in moderation, now's the time to do it. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be treated for a wound at some point in your lifetime if you choose not to.
Right. So we've talked about a little bit about nutrition. We've talked about definitely not smoking, at least for wound care, but just in general. But can you talk about it's funny you mentioned hydration, but let's talk about moisture on the body and incontinence. Like, these to me seem to be big problems with the inability of a wound to heal. And can you talk about why that's the case?
Sure. Anytime, I always think about people that love to soak in a bathtub. I'm one of those people. I love to soak in a bathtub. But when I get out, I have the wrinkly effect. I call it like the bathtub effect. And my skin's pruny. And what that does is decrease my skin's resistance to be resilient. So when people have perpetual moisture on their skin, the microclimate, that perpetual moisture decreases the skin's ability to fight back against extrinsic forces like pressure. Additionally, when skin is too moist, it increases the shearing or friction because your skin's sticking to whatever object you're trying to move away from. So urine in and of itself increases moisture around the skin, which means it decreases the skin's ability to stay strong. It also allows other things to creep in, like bacteria or fungus. Fungus loves to grow in dark, warm, moist environments, which is what happens when we're incontinent. In our briefs, our pants create dark, warm, moist environments.
Right.
And then if you're incontinent of feces, feces also has an acidic component to it. And we know there's bacteria in our stool, usually E. coli or Enterococcus. There's bacteria in our gut that helps us break down food, which means there's also bacteria in the stool that our gut produces. When you add bacteria and acidity to our skin on top of moisture, it helps erode the skin.
Yeah, and I think it's in perspiration is also a cause of moisture on the
moisture
body.
Moisture contributor.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, any type of moisture, regardless of whether it is from incontinence or from sweating or from baths, these are, you know, not good in terms of either preventing wound or causing it to heal.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So what about, you mentioned diabetes a little bit. Can you talk about other either diseases or medical conditions that would inherently cause or inherently prevent a pressure ulcer from healing properly?
Well, there's a lot. that's a long conversation.
Yeah.
The current national standard is if they have two or more comorbid medical conditions at the same time, their risk of skin failure skyrockets. So, for example, they had a thyroid disorder and high blood pressure. That's two. So your risk of skin failure goes up significantly. If you have COPD and atherosclerosis or arterial disease, that's two. Your risk goes sky high.
Mm-hmm.
But then you think about somebody that might have numerous. They've had a stroke, they have kidney disease, they have diabetes, they have dementia. The more diagnoses you add, the greater their chance of risk of skin failure, whether it's through pressure or other disease factors, is enormous.
And so the overarching idea is that whatever inhibits blood flow or whatever inhibits your body to carry the nutrients it needs in the blood, those are the risk factors in terms of comorbidities.
Correct, or maintain homeostasis. So, for example, someone with thyroid disorder, the thyroid, of course, gives off hormones but helps regulate our body. So if the thyroid is diseased, it's not going to regulate our body as well. You know, people with gallbladder disease, it doesn't regulate your nutrients as well when it passes through your, you know, your digestive system. So really any medical disease or condition that alters our state of homeostasis elevates the risk of skin breakdown, whether that's through pressure or some other disease process.
Speaking of that, then, what does the role of a resident's mental capacity play in the healing of a wound or the prevention of the wound?
Mm-hmm. You know, people that have Alzheimer's dementia, for example, I used to run an Alzheimer's dementia building when I was director of nursing, and they may not have the capacity to understand, this is supper, I need to eat now. My body is hungry. That disease process alters the way that we not only think, but the way that we move, the way that the decisions that we make. And so if a resident is alert and oriented, but maybe has schizophrenia, they may not be making the best choices to help heal wounds or prevent wounds from healing. Sometimes those choices lead up to the fact that we do have a wound. But when somebody is mentally incapacitated, they have a durable power of attorney, a healthcare proxy that speaks for them or is able to help make those decisions. But when somebody is mentally incapacitated, it is a challenge to keep them from breaking down, whether that's through nutrition or the decision to, man, my butt's hurting, I really need to move now, or my doctor told me I need to have compression stockings, I'm going to choose to put those on every day. Maybe they choose not to, or they're resistant to it.
Right. So I guess the overarching idea on that is that when you have an individual that cannot cooperate in their care, that obviously makes caring more difficult.
Correct. And sometimes they look to the wound specialist or the nursing home staff to kind of forgive all the sins of the past, so to speak. Well, I made poor choices by smoking for 40 years, but now I have a wound and you need to fix it. And oftentimes we can't because you've smoked for 40 years and you now have major occlusion, major occlusive disease. So it goes back to that. Not all wounds are healable.
Right.
And in order to get a wound to heal, the stars really do have to align and we do have to mitigate as many issues as we can. But we cannot always get rid of every issue out there that's preventing the wound from healing.
Correct.
Having that open discussion, being really honest about what's going on with the wound. How did we get this wound? What is keeping the wound from healing? And what do we do about it? Yep.
Exactly. And actually, that brings up a good topic there. Can you talk about... we call it non-compliance, but when the resident is not going along with some of the basics of the care plan, is what kind of, you know, I guess other than saying, okay, you know, that's your decision. I mean, what can be done when you have a resident that maybe doesn't want to be turned every 2 hours? You know, like how does that affect the care plan?
I think sometimes it goes back to really defining what the goal is. So, Rob, let's pretend you have a wound. And so I'm going to say, Rob, what is your goal with this wound? Well, my goal is to heal it. Okay, Rob, one of the things that's keeping your wound from healing is you're smoking and you are drinking, you know, a can of regular pop every day and you're diabetic.
And as you say that, I'm actually holding up my can of Coke Zero that I've been drinking this episode.
Yeah. And so, Rob, if your goal is to heal this wound, I need you to stop smoking, and I need you to put down your regular, you know, your regular can of pop. And Rob's going to look at me and say, Martha, I've smoked for 40 years. I don't want to quit smoking. I love it. It's my one joy throughout the day. Well, that's fine. Then I'm going to look at you and say, okay, Rob, I'm okay with that. It's your body. But then the goal should not be to heal your wound, because I'm not magic, right? It's a partnership between the two of us. So in which case, I need to move your goal to be really a palliative wound, because your goal is really to keep smoking, not to heal your wound. So that's one thing, right? But if your goal is really to heal the wound, and you have occlusive disease, and you're willing to quit smoking, and eat the diet prescribed, and, you know, quit drinking your regular pop for the day so we can manage your diabetes, now that's a reasonable goal that we can do. So instead of charting you down as non-compliance because you won't quit smoking, I really need to move your goal, change your care plan, so to speak.
That makes sense, because
sometimes the non-compliance is due to fear. I had compression stockings in the past and they hurt me. Okay, but it's 2019. We have a lot of different compression stockings out there now that are more comfortable. And so sometimes it's really asking, why are you not wanting to do what I prescribe? Because trust me, it's not, I'm the doctor, you're going to do what I say. It is, you're the patient, you're in control. So how do I help move that needle to where we want it to be so that we have the same goal? Yeah.
Right. So that makes perfect sense, because, I mean, like, you know, you'll see a chart and it'll say resident refused to be turned. Well, okay, why? Is it because their shoulder hurts and the CNA mm-hmm. that does that is jerking it too hard? You know, so, mm-hmm. you know, you never know. But I think that's an appropriate and reasonable viewpoint of noncompliance in the resident is, okay, well,
right.
you want to keep smoking. That's, you know, you're putting a nail in the coffin then. And so we're going to move mm-hmm. you. We're going to move the concept of what we're even doing here to, mm-hmm. you know, you want to maintain your dignity and keeping smoking. Okay, well, that doesn't go hand in hand with healing this wound.
Right.
Because, I mean, like, we, you know, in the literature on this, I mean, I think I can't remember if it's CMS or they went from a pressure ulcer being a never event to, you know, now kind of, all right, well, and that's not true. Not every single one of these pressure ulcers is avoidable based on
right.
whatever is happening with your body or your life choices.
Right. And we are dealing with an extraordinarily sick population in the elderly, because it is 2019 and we are keeping people alive much, much longer than we used to, with conditions that, you know, 15 years ago they wouldn't survive from. Now they do, because we have better medications, better treatments, better medical interventions, so they are still alive. We are dealing with an incredibly sick population.
Right. It's our ability to keep someone alive is not catching up to our ability to care for them in those later years. It's kind of like football, where we've made all the pads and in gear such that a man can run as fast as he can to the other guy and not hurt him, but we haven't realized how to make them safe in the long run of now they're
right.
getting, you know, brain damage. So with that in mind, I guess it's not impossible for you to be able, a pressure ulcer isn't a death sentence. However, you know, taking in these other factors, you know, it can be harder to heal, or in some instances, the resident, him or herself, has made it impossible to heal.
Well, and I think not all wounds, and not just pressure, but not all wounds can be healed. So sometimes our goal is to keep them from getting worse, or keep them from getting infected, if we can. And so it's not that. Yeah, you know, I don't know, 30 years ago, you couldn't live with a wound. 2019, you can live with a wound and live for many years with a wound. So even on wounds that are not healable, it doesn't mean that we're writing them off and saying, well, you know, good luck to you. We'll work on your funeral arrangements here in just a few weeks.
Right.
They can live with a wound if their body is able to continue going. I would say there are medications that also delay wound healing. There's some medications that create wounds. And so, you know, hydroxyurea, for example, is a medication that can cause wounds. I've treated two cases personally. One was a sickle cell ulcer around the ankle, and we were not able to take them off the hydroxyurea because they would go into full-blown sickle cell crisis and most likely die. Mm. The other one that I had was over an Achilles heel area, and she had pre-leukemia. The challenge is, if we take her off the hydroxyurea, she's going to go into full-blown leukemia. So you leave them on the hydroxyurea, but you know you most likely will not ever heal that wound, and the wound may get worse. But at least they still live. They don't go into full-blown sickle cell, and they don't go into full-blown leukemia. There's some medications that delay wound healing, prednisone being one of them.
Hmm.
There's some medications that encourage wound healing, and there's an entire list of those. This nurse actually did a PubMed lit review and published them all in one document. It's called, and I'm going to paraphrase, but it's basically the pharmacological impact of medications on wound healing.
That makes sense. So, I'll have to research that and get that URL up on the mm-hmm. on the screen for people to read.
Yep.
That's a component that we haven't talked about, is how medications can delay healing or prevent it or enhance it.
Mm-hmm, correct.
You
would need a PharmD for that podcast, Rob.
Yeah. I think that would be above everybody's pay grade on that one, except for that PharmD. But
yeah.
But Martha, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast for the third time. You're a true friend of this podcast. Again, your episodes are always, look, pressure ulcers are one of the reasons we get a lot of our phone calls. So the more that we can educate our audience, particularly here in Georgia, about the causes, the preventions, what families can do to help, the nursing home, you know, go in and tell grandma and smack the cigarette out of her hand, that the better off we are as a community. So we really appreciate you coming on so often. To talk with us about that.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I thank you for giving us the voice and chance to educate on pressure ulcers and other wound types also. It's just very important. So
very
good talking to you. Thank you, Rob.
You as well. Thanks a lot. Always great to have Martha on the show talking about pressure ulcers. Excuse me. She is just so knowledgeable about the subject, and it's always a great resource. Her episodes are always some of our most listened to episodes. We are breaking records with when we have her on, getting on them ratings. But at any rate, Happy New Year, I guess, is in order. This is our first episode of the new year. Hope your 2020 has started off great. I know ours is. We're looking forward to bringing you many episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast this year. As we move into almost our third year, I believe our next episode will actually be our third year anniversary. So that's interesting that we've been doing this long. But that's actually going to conclude this episode. We're happy that you made it this far. You can check out new episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast every other week, bi-monthly, as they say, on YouTube, our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or wherever you get your podcasts from. And with that, we will see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.